The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
Money! It's a crime.
Money!
But down out and down at
money!
Down, 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 down.
I don't know any of those other
words. Does Sal know who that is?
Do I? I don't know who it is, but I know the song. That's a classic rock song.
Warrant?
Huh? No, you idiot.
That was it, Warren?
Pink Floyd, man.
Pink Floyd. I knew that.
But he's a Warren. The ching ching. I did think.
Yeah,
it was,
that's Pink Floyd, bro.
What Warrant song was I thinking of that's like that?
Nothing.
No.
I thought you were just being cute.
No, I wasn't being cute.
Oh, man.
Scorpions.
Scorpions. Here I am.
Rock you like a hurricane.
Wow.
Come on, come on, come on.
All right, that's pretty good.
Yeah, so Q&A time. Q&A time.
Yeah. Don't do that again. We're back at it again.
Dude, why do I feel like you put a bunch up there, man?
It's like
there's a lot of questions.
With words. We got tons of great questions every week.
Yeah.
I feel like we're
going to hammer these out tonight.
Before we get started, you know, Justin is feels like Sal takes all the questions. He gets the hog.
Actually, he said you do too.
We were fighting about this earlier.
Yeah, well, yeah. Justin said it, and then I actually seconded it. I'm like, you know what? You're right, dude. Anyone that's addressed to
right
Justin
over.
Or Adam, we never answer. But if it's addressed to Sal, we definitely
he
answer.
He who knows all the answers ask.
Yeah. Well, you know, it started
answers the questions.
Yeah, yeah. He started it out. Oh, this one's addressed to Sal. Oh, yeah, we're doing that one. Okay.
Yeah.
What
yeah.
a dick.
Like, so immediately.
So today we
sound like a dick.
Today we're going to avoid all questions addressed to Sal, and we're going to start with Justin. What's your
if
favorite?
The condom fits?
Well, no. This is the here's the one. So Justin got angry because he's like, we never answer questions that are directed towards me, and we're like, that's because they're Star Wars questions.
Because nobody fucking asks you anything.
And then Justin's like, no, it's okay, it's fine, guys, it's all right, yeah, it's fine, I'm fine, I'm happy.
Yeah,
I'm
I'll
cool.
be passive
I'm
aggressive cool. about this.
Yeah. So we're gonna go ahead and ask Justin a question.
So today's Doug. Entire episode is Q&A about Star Wars.
It's Star Wars Mania.
Well, this is one of these questions that was asked a long time ago.
We'll get into Wookiepedia
on Instagram, and we ignored it.
Mm.
Yeah,
we
it's
did, didn't we?
What is Justin's favorite Star Wars character?
Such a loaded question.
It is. How is that loaded?
Because there's so many options.
He's like this. We could get it's really
like,
philosophical.
Exactly.
Know,
like
me
each
and you
one
like,
has
answer
a,
the fucking question.
Each one has a specific moment of you know in my lifetime that I was like, wow. At one point, I felt like I was Luke Skywalker because I was young and I was impressionable and like. You know, I saw the world through this.
Oh my God, he's
through this, these eyes that you know had hope and you know didn't know how the world worked, right? And like didn't see the Empire for what it really was.
He's going into
you
it.
Know, but
he's
like, but then deep. I really started identifying myself, you know, with more of you know like a gunslinger. You know, I was like more like a Han Solo kind of guy, right? You know, a little bit of the anti-hero sort of, you know, character that, you know, that's my guy.
Then you settle on Ewok?
Yeah, well, yeah. And
that
then
was
the,
my favorite character.
Then the little you guys, that's what separates real fans from...
Actually, Ewoks are probably the least favorite of all the... Right? Isn't that the ones that the most hated
yes.
Star Wars characters?
Well, because they were supposed to be like Wookiees. Like, they were supposed
little,
to be Wookiees,
but
he had
teddy
this
bears.
Great idea to make them little teddy bears that were cute, like because I think Teddy Ruxpin was popular at the time, right?
Merchandising.
Yeah.
Is that really?
I'm Wicket.
Is that really how it went
Stupid.
Down?
Stupid. Yeah.
You don't remember Teddy Ruxpin?
That's exactly how
no,
it went
I'm
down.
Very familiar with that.
Somebody might be able to verify that. Yeah, you know, one of my fellow nerds.
So I'm not see. I'm glad we asked this because now I'm interested because I do remember that era. I do remember Teddy Ruxpin.
He screwed up. Yeah, the best movies I mean, the first one was amazing, but I mean, really, The Empire Strikes Back was so good because he brought in somebody else to help him write it. And this is why I'm actually excited about the new Star Wars film, is because the same guy that came in to kind of help write this new series, he's there with J.J. Abrams, and they're together creating this whole new genre for us to
experience. It's going to be like the mind pump of Star Wars.
Hold on a second. I got a great idea. I got a
hard-on thinking about it.
This is what we're going to do. I got a great idea.
We're definitely going.
Going for the opening, and we're all dressing up as characters. It's been said it has to be done. It's going to be done
now. Which one are you going to be?
Me? I'm obviously Darth Vader. Obviously. Okay.
No way, dude. Adam's got the frame for Darth Vader.
No.
You don't got the frame.
Adam's a Wookiee, bro. He's freaking Chewy. He's gonna be Chewy.
I think you're like Lando Calrissian.
I'll be Lando.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
I'll be badass. I'll be Lando. Who are you gonna be? Who are you gonna be?
Han Solo.
You're Han
Solo. Motherfucker, Han Solo.
What's Doug gonna be?
All day.
Are we gonna have an Ewok?
He'll be CP3PO.
No, he's
that's R2D2.
Yeah, that's R2D2.
Right? R2D2,
that's
right.
Get your characters right, guys.
Oh shit! You caught us.
Oh, Master Luke.
Moment. Yeah, yeah.
Yoda. Why isn't he going to be Yoda? Yoda, dude.
He could be Yoda. Actually,
Would be a great. This would be a great time. All right, are we ready for the next?
Now next Star Wars question.
I want to give you a serious question now.
A very serious one. This give is a professional.
Why wasn't that one serious?
Well, that's pretty serious. I felt it was serious.
Yeah.
The next one is from Curdy D 2011, and this one is whether or not you should masturbate before or after a workout.
Another very serious.
What a silly question, though. Everybody knows after. Everybody knows that.
Save the testosterone for your workout, man.
Yeah. Come on now.
Save the testosterone for your workout.
You don't empty the chamber before you do a couple deadlifts, sir?
Hey.
No.
I actually
don't want to work out anymore, but I just want to sit here.
No, it happens during for Sal.
Okay, well, let's
depends how heavy I go.
Let's actually get a little bit deeper in this question, because even though it's kind of funny and silly, I used to know buddies, football buddies, that used to before like game week, right?
So they wouldn't whack off.
They wouldn't masturbate the whole week or have sex or anything.
I tried that. Yeah.
So what's the theory behind that? And is there any science behind that? Is there any science behind that, Sal?
Yes, actually. Withholding from spilling your seed. God, that sounds gross. Why did I say it like that? It's so gross.
I think you just say it like
that. Gross. So withholding will temporarily elevate testosterone levels, but it's short-lived. So if you don't have sex for a long time, then you actually drop testosterone levels. But if you don't do it for a week or 2 weeks, I think it is, something like that, you'll see spikes in testosterone. So it does help. It does help.
Wow.
You just might pop a boner during your freaking event, you know? Not a good thing.
If your testosterone's flying that well, you're lucky. If you're a grown ass man, you're still popping boners impressed while you're working out. Yeah. That'd be impressive.
I'm not going to be mad at it.
All right. So I think we answered that one.
Next up from FitChris86. When did you guys decide to leave the big gyms and become independent?
Oh.
Big box gym.
This is a Global good gym. One.
Well, I can't. What year was it? I fired Justin. It was.
You fired.
Can I go first? Because I got a good story. I got two stories. But I'll start with the first one, then you guys can do your thing, and then I'll tell the second.
All right.
So I started.
So you come back over the top of this. Okay, yeah. Go ahead. Go tell your story.
I like to sandwich your stories with my stories. So I started at, I was 18 years old. So I was just a kid, started in the company, right off the bat crushed it, did very, very well. At the age of 20, so for 2 years I was with the company, with a large corporate gym known as 20 Fire Fitness. I left at the age of 20. So let me tell you guys what happened. I'm going to give all the details. This is the first time I've ever done this on air.
Wow, so I feel like this is going to take us all the way back.
Yeah, no. Let me tell you what happened.
Into the future.
So do you guys remember? You guys were old. You guys have been there long enough to remember flipping. Do you remember what that was?
Of course.
Okay. So flipping, for the listeners that are listening, we had memberships that we would sell that were prepaid, 3-year memberships for, let's say, $900. That was the average. Well, we had members that were paying $40 a month. Now, you do the math. $40 a month, over 2 years, you're going to spend as much as you would spend on a 3-year membership that you could get if you prepaid, right?
And then tell them what it would be after that.
And then after that, you get a renewal of $149 or $99 a year, okay?
It was a killer deal.
So, initially...
Before you go further, why don't you explain the science, or what the reason why that they came up with that membership. The reason why they came up with the membership was because the average person
doesn't use it
would stop using a gym.
And they would never cancel.
Well, that's the genius behind any of these commercial gyms. Yes. Yeah. That's what they bank on.
And then the average person, they would stop going after 3 months, continue paying for an additional 7. So basically gyms would get about 10 free months. So then Mark Mastroff, being the genius that he is, comes up with this concept of, let's do a prepaid membership where we get $900, since the average member never even lasts to $900. Let's get $900, make it a smoking killer deal that seems so ridiculous you'd want to do it.
Right.
And that's
and then with the low renewal. Yeah.
And you don't want to cancel it because you'll never get that deal ever again.
No one will ever cancel a $99 renewal. And I guarantee you we have listeners right now who've got that.
They still got it.
That probably work out somewhere else or don't work out. So
my family has it.
So it wasn't illegal at this point when they first came out with these types of membership. It wasn't against company policy or illegal to have someone who's already got a membership paying $40 a month to flip and switch to this prepaid membership. It was frowned upon, but it wasn't something that would get you in trouble. When people started figuring this out, then gyms would, because what would happen is when you'd sell a flip, you'd get commission, and it would go towards your sales goal, right? So all these very competitive clubs, and let's be honest, guys, that was competitive back then. I mean, we were competing hard against other clubs within the company. People were trying for top sales. So then it became this like flip fest, where people were doing this left and right. Well, what happens is the company loses money on that because we would end up flipping people who were members for 2 or 3 years who actually were coming and using the gym, paying $40 a month, and we're turning them into these 3-year memberships. So
totally
the company
cannibalizing the business.
It would cannibalize the business. Mm-hmm. But everybody was doing it. Literally, it was a thing. I mean,
it took 24 Hour Fitness several years before they figured it out, though, right. That it was cannibalizing.
Right, and everybody was doing it. So, and I did it. Everybody did. It wasn't something that I was the only one doing it. Anyhow, all of a sudden, it became this big deal, and they did kind of they sicked this like the internal security person to find out who's flipping. Now, when they did this, they fucked up because I don't think they realized just how bad it was in the company. I think they thought, you're going to find a few people, make an example of them, and then it's not going to be a big deal. Well, this fucking, and there was a lady, I'm not going to name her name, but she's stupid. He sicked her on everybody, and she went apeshit and found all kinds of people doing it and started firing people left and right. And so at the time, some of my very good friends were getting fired for doing something that everybody was doing. And it was so infuriating to me. And I was a young kid, I was real emotional, and you know, I kind of had a fuck you attitude, which I kind of still have now. And so when this was happening, I remember my very, very good friend who was my mentor at the time got demoted from a district manager position to general manager position because this was happening in his district. And when I found out about this, I walked out. Mm. Now, I didn't quit. I didn't tell anybody. I didn't tell my staff. I didn't tell anybody. I walked out of the gym.
Peace out.
Now this was, I was running the flagship club of the company. I had a staff of, I don't know, 50 people. Well, when they found out that I had walked out, the whole gym walked out. Everybody walked out. And I didn't find out until I got a phone call from the president who yelled at me, get back in the gym. You're causing a problem. All these people walked out. And I had no idea. So I called people up and had a meeting with them and told them all to go back to work and to not involve themselves with this whole situation. But I left that time and I bought myself a gym down in Palm Desert with the gentleman who had, you know, at that time been my mentor. So that was the first time that I left and went off on my own. How about you guys? I know it's a kind of a long
nice.
Story.
Nice.
Oh, we're not going to talk about how you came back and then left again? You're not going to talk about that?
I mean, well, I did. I ran a club down in Palm. We owned this gym. We're partial owners of the club in Palm Desert. We ended up selling it. And at that time, even though I had left in a blaze of fury, you know, I was a big producer. I was the producer at this time. This was probably before you guys even worked there, I think. Right. I don't think you were there at this. You were there? You remember this whole thing? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, I was there since 2000.
You were there right when I came back, I think, because then they brought me back to Hillsdale. And they wanted me because I was a big producer. So then I came back the second time around and they gave me whatever club I wanted. And I picked the one that was closest to, you know, my home in San Jose. They had re-grand opened it. So it was going to be a big deal. So I went in there. They bumped the guy out of there because he couldn't produce, and we crushed it. We killed it. We did a good job, and I stayed with the company for another maybe a year or two, grand opened another gym in San Jose, and then I saw the tide turn. I saw the direction that they were going. They had given me this district manager who was just the least motivating, worst salesperson you could ever meet in your entire life. Like, this was my district manager, and I could run circles around him. And then he would get on me for the stupidest shit of all time. Like,
I wonder if I knew who that is.
You, of course you do. Yeah. It was a, you know, I'm running a club. Here I am running a grand opening club, destroying it, number one, many categories. And he would get on me and write me up for not highlighting the planner with the right colors.
Yeah.
Not bullshitting you.
I know. Yeah.
Yeah. I know. Literally getting written up for that stupid shit.
Yeah.
And so when I saw the tide that when they were forcing this kind of like organization, this kind of like, we need to fall within these certain lines, and then we're bringing in these people who've never run gyms before to run the company type of deal. Then I bounced, and then I opened my personal training studio, and I never looked back.
Right.
Yep.
Well,
what about you guys?
That was so like Sal, I was there early on. So one thing you didn't mention that you were there for, and I was there for also, which was before HR existed.
Right.
We were there before, and I was there after. So, I mean, if you've ever worked for...
Oh, it was the Wild West before.
Yeah, I mean, being a part of a company
that... Well, your barbecue story says it all.
being a part of a company that is growing that fast and that many people making money. So like Sal was saying, what was crazy? So he was on the sales side, the membership side. I was on the fitness side. So I was
I started as a trainer, and then I went over to,
yeah,
to the sales side.
Yeah, I remember, because you couldn't hack it as well as a trainer, so he went over to...
So I came in
and the HR didn't exist, and like Sal, I was there when it came on, and when it came on, it was crazy. Like the story he told about flipping memberships. Well, that big KeyFit Plus membership that was $900, what he didn't mention also included five personal training sessions.
Right.
And the five personal training sessions were about $250 of revenue there. Well, here's what's so crazy is most people cared so much just about the membership, they didn't even give a shit about the training.
And
so,
then that's what we latched on to.
Well, and very, 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 very few people actually even utilized their training. So what was really popular, and it was totally not frowned upon until later on when HR came around, was trainers used to, if their schedule wasn't filled up, they would just slot the hours in there, and then they would
paid
just
on those
they get paid on those hours. Those people would never show up.
Yeah, see, that's really gangster. I wasn't that bad.
Well, and then it got to a point where people were like, I don't think we should do that, because then what if the person comes back and asks for it? So then trainers got smart, and they said, okay, they'll call the people down. You know, because they would keep bugging the people to come use their training. They'd be like, I don't want the training. Well, then can you come in and sign off all your sessions?
Right.
And then we would convince people to come in, sign off all their sessions, say they don't want them, and then the trainers would clock them in and pay themselves.
Right.
So this type of shit was going on like crazy. And everybody did it. It was just part of how the company was making so much money. Everybody was making hand over fist and selling all these memberships. It was the heydays. And
it was like the Wolf of Wall Street, fitness-wise. I mean, fitness style. Much.
And so I was already a fitness manager. I was a manager already. I was 22 years old when this happened.
Old.
And crazy, right? I was 22 years old. I was managing the Capital McKee location. And in comes the HR when it just started. And my club happened to be the first club they were going to audit.
And it was that same lady, right? The internal security lady?
Yeah, and she, let me tell you, so from the rest of my career, 24 Fitness.
Do you hate her as much as I do?
Oh, yeah. And she hated me because I was the first club that audited. So, of course, when they come to my club, it's a disaster. All this illegal shit is going on. And they would have to, and the only reason why I didn't get fired was because they were going to have to fire every one of my trainers. Because at one point, every single one of them had did something along those lines. And you could, if you're going to fire one for doing that, you got to fire all of them, regardless of who did it more or worse or whatever. So they couldn't. But then I got known as this guy who just lets his staff run wild and this and that. And so I was kind of blackballed. Well, then I'm the first one to get audited. So, of course, me being a good dude, I call all my peers and be like, hey, HR is coming around. They're auditing all
the
clubs. Clean your shit up. So everybody fucking burns their files. You know, everybody burns their files, get rid of it. So then I just end up being the one guy who had the bad club, right? So then I was blackballed because of that. Whatever. I still stayed with the company and still continued to crush and break records there. And later on is where I met Justin. You know, I hired Justin when I was at Hillsdale probably about 5 years.
So you only left after you only left once.
Yeah, I was gonna say I don't remember doing any of that shit.
Yeah, that was way before. That was before we had.
Yeah, Justin came in when we all started getting we were straight.
Yeah, HR had existed and everything like that. There wasn't a lot of shadiness.
You crazy. Have no idea, Justin. Back then,
no, it was crazy.
You just guys told me stories. I remember.
You could when I first started, you could make up your own price almost.
Oh yeah totally.
Like you could charge over this minimum. It was like buying a goddamn car.
Yeah,
it was crazy.
I tried to start doing that when they gave us the master trainer level thing, and then I would keep raising my prices internally. You know, I'm like, dude, I got like 4 certs. You know, I charge this much, and blah blah blah, and it worked every time.
Yeah,
and I wanted to keep pressing that, and then they wouldn't let me do it.
No,
stupid.
Yeah, it was silly the way that the company every year. So I was there for almost 10 years. Every year I worked there, there was a compensation change. So there was a comp plan change every single year. And every year, anyone that's worked for a company, anytime a comp plan comes up, no matter what company you work for, it's never in the benefit of the employee.
No, what they're doing is they're figuring out how they can pay people less.
Yes.
And what they're going to say is they're trying to push different line items. But in reality, like, everybody's making too much money here. Let's give less commission on this line item and give more on this one.
So now the neat part about someone like me who was around as far back as when Sal was and then stuck it through all this was I was lucky and I got grandfathered in. So I watched a lot of people coming on, onboarding, and getting these new compensation plans, and I was still making very good money for what I did. But I was watching all these people around me get kind of screwed. And believe it or not, Justin played a role in even part of my decision of leaving because, you know, he was someone that I really cared about as an employee for me. And I remember when it was kind of his time to be promoted, and he should have been the next person that was in line to get this position. And I watched other people that were shit butts get promoted into that position before him. And it drove me crazy because he was the right person to get put.
Bro, the A teams no longer exist there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We had some heavy hitters. We had some champions in there.
Oh, yeah.
And those clubs don't produce, I mean, half.
Yeah, no, definitely.
What they did then.
So I hung around, and I probably hung around about 3 years longer than I actually should have. And, you know,
I'm surprised. See, I didn't realize you were there that long.
I was. And
how long ago was it that you left?
It was, now it's been quite a while. I mean, I'm 34. I'd left when I was 28 or 9.
Wow, you were there for a while.
Yeah, and I was
because I couldn't last that long.
I was coming up for the 10-year. One more year would have been my 10-year. So
I could not last that long because I opened my personal training studio at – I was 22. So
– Well, what I did – I mean, and it was really how do I say this without sounding like a cocky fuck here? I smashed everybody. It wasn't even close.
Oh, that's better.
I mean, I literally showed up to work late. I left early. I took 2-3 hour lunch breaks. I'm just going to keep it real. And I could still outperform any other guy in the area.
Oh, because I left.
I'll validate it. Yeah.
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 By far. And, you know, and I attribute that a lot to the staff that I had built. But a lot of that came with my experience and knowing how to motivate and move people and build a team. And, you know, I'd built a really strong team. And nobody fucked with me. Upper management, I have emails that I'm
– Well, sent. They just never let you get – to another level, let's just say.
Exactly. And that's
they wanted to keep you there as their money making, you know.
And monkey. So at one point I had to look at myself and I was approaching my 30s. I was almost 30 and it was like, okay, I got 401k, I've got benefits, I got my house, I'm making 6 figures, but I wanted more. And it was like, talk about a hard decision because, I mean, that's decent money. I had security.
But couldn't you also see the writing on the wall in terms of the direction of the company and how the industry was changing?
Oh, I saw that 4 years before that, but it hadn't mattered because I was in almost in a protected position.
Right.
They wouldn't touch me. They wouldn't mess with me because...
But you weren't worried about like, oh, fuck, this is going to...
Well, I wasn't worried about the company like dissolving or going away. Like I knew that it was going to, they created a big enough brand and name for themselves. The worst thing that could happen is they go public and I just continue having assholes work above me, which I had learned. And this is also what matured me really fast was I had learned how to manage my upper management at a very young age. Like how do I talk to them to get what I wanted? And so it was going to be that way no matter what. So I would just replace one poo butt for another that would come in and then try and tell me what to do. And, you know, they think they would be telling me what to do, but in reality, I'd really be doing what I want to do and they wouldn't be able to do anything about it. So, and at the end of the day, it always came down to numbers and revenue. You know, if you were producing, you were hitting numbers and I was always exceeding goal and I was always doing well. So they had to, you know, as much as they probably, and that was, this is part of where the name We Love to Hate Adam stemmed from. It stemmed from all the way back to 24 Hour Fitness days, because I used to say that my boss loved to hate me. It was a love hate relationship. I was his number one producer. I was responsible for probably 60-70% of his paycheck. But at the same time too, I was his biggest fucking headache.
See, when I left, I was part of the next generation training. I was supposed to become a district manager. When I left, the VP, I had a new district manager at this point. Him and the VP came in. I gave them 2 weeks notice. For every day for 2 weeks, they were in there trying to convince me to stay. We're going to promote you. You're going to do this. And I just couldn't work for someone else. I
called the captains of the carrot stringing.
Yeah.
Oh.
Right.
So much.
The carrot stringing. And that really is what led me to bail. I was just like Adam mentioned.
You left before Adam?
Yeah, I left before Adam because well, and two, like something happened where we were all just like fed up, and then we actually had a meeting at your house, I believe, yeah.
I was going to do a mass walkout, like
yeah. Some people actually ended up opening their own gym from that, right? Yeah. And a lot of other trainers were just like, dude, this is bullshit. Like we're fed up. But it was really for me. I just wanted to go to the next level, and I just wanted to have my own club, and you know. Experience that and do all that, and like it was too long. Like there was one club, oh, that's not gonna happen. Okay, there's this club, oh yeah, but you know, maybe next one we're actually gonna give it to this person, and then oh yeah, this, but then you know, I need to see more sales on the weekend and you know, all this shit. And I'm just like, you know what, I am so efficient, I'm so good at doing my own thing, why don't I just do my own thing? And then it just was like, you know, it was hard because I totally was stoked on the situation. It was really fun and easy. It was easy, dude. Like the work environment, everything was like I was going to class or something, you know, and hang out with my buddies and still making money, which was cool. But it was just like, you know, this is my career. I'm not like just some fucking, right. You know, I'm not like a bartender. I'm not like doing this as like a side gig or something.
How long were you there for?
How long was I there for? Maybe like 3-4 years?
Yeah, 3 or 4 at least.
Yeah, 3 or 4 years.
Because I had Santa Teresa for 3 years, and then you were with Hillsdale before that. So probably three.
You literally
yeah.
came to the clubs after I left. I think you came like one or two people after.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. No, I definitely do. Because we worked with a lot of the same people. I mean, I had Larry over at Hillsdale.
Yeah.
You know, and I knew where you were at. You were at Hillsdale, and then when you left Hillsdale and I went over to Hillsdale, you were at Santa Teresa Grand Opening, and you worked with a bunch of my buddies there. So always knew of each other and what was going on. But I also, like Justin was saying, it was a hard situation because I loved the gym. I loved being there. It was fun. Yeah, it was funny. Fun.
Let's be honest. It was school for us. We learned a lot of what we know now and preach now. There.
Oh, absolutely.
I'll give it credit all day long.
Yeah. Well,
that was the best school I ever went to.
I was talking to somebody about, they're like, oh, I think I might go to school to learn how to better sell and be a better seller in sales. And I'm just like, why? Like, why don't you just go to, you know, a 24 or like a commercial type gym setting where,
that's where you learn.
Yeah. Where you have to actually form, you know, a good rapport with people and be able to project yourself in a certain way and get better at that just by practice.
Mm-hmm.
And also be surrounded by a bunch of killers who you watch on a daily basis, you know, perfect their, you know, exactly how they're delivering their message.
Right. When I say Wolf of Wall Street, I mean it. And I don't mean the extent with like, you know, drugs and hookers and all that crazy shit. What I mean is when like Leonardo DiCaprio's giving those meetings and motivating everybody and yelling into the mic, and everybody's that was our production meeting.
It was like
meetings.
That, for sure.
That was our production meetings. I, you know, here I am, you know, my very first club. I'm 19 years old and then 20 in the big club, and I'd have all my staff show up, 50, 60 people, and I'd stand up on a table, and I would just go, and I would go off, and it was awesome. And people, we would leave there like we're going to go to war. Now, I learned that from my mentors who had those similar, and I was very lucky and fortunate to work under people that were just champions. And they are now, today even. They don't work there anymore, but they're still extremely successful. It was school, man. I tell you, it was the best way for me to enter this industry because learning from what I learned there, I use every single day.
Yeah,
to this day.
I looked at the whole process of leaving, and I've used this analogy before of, you know, business and life and making money is kind of like a game of poker to me. And, you know, I was in a position when I was there with, I had a good stack of chips. I was having fun playing cards, you know, making money, doing my thing like that. And I was in a point where, you know, I wanted more, but then I was like, God, if I want more, I'm going to have to risk a lot more.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you're young and you're first coming up and risk is not very high.
You got bills. And
yeah, you don't have a house. You don't have a house yet. You might not have a car yet. You might not be in a relationship or married yet. Like, risking all you have is not a big deal because you don't really have very much. But at that point in my life, I had a lot. I had a lot going for me, and I had a very good situation. And I remember thinking, like, I'm about to shove all these chips in because I want more. I'm all in, and I'm going to figure this out. And, you know, I left to go do something totally non-fitness related because of the opportunity. And that's what...
Did you have that opportunity before you left? Did you know that's what you're leaving to do?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
In fact, I did it. I started it. I was building it at the same time. So
I had no idea. I had nothing. I left the first time. I sat down with my buddy Don, who left, you know, that's the guy that one of my first mentors. We sat at his house and we're like, and we opened up, what was it, CBI? International Club Business International. Remember that magazine?
Okay.
It was like gym magazine or whatever. And we went in the back of it and we looked for gyms to buy. That's literally what I did the second day after. And we were going to buy a Gold's. That was initially what I was going to do, is I'd open a Gold's. But then we realized all the franchising and this and that. We're like, let's just open our own gym. And there was an ad for a club down in Palm Desert. And it was a beautiful club, racquetball, swimming pool, rock climbing, huge, you know, facility. And in it, it said that they were looking for a for managers to come in and turn the club around. So what we did is we called the guy and we convinced him to let us run the club for a month and prove to him that he would make more money selling us a piece of it than he would employing anybody. And we went over there and we destroyed it in a month and he let us buy into it. And that's how that all started. But we had no idea what we were going to do. And then the second time I left, I thought I was going to open a GNC. I was like, I'm going to open up a GNC, a supplement store. And I looked into it. And at the time I was working at the bank, I was doing investments because that was kind of like, I'm going to do this and then look on the side and see what I can do for business. And I just happened to walk into a tanning salon, and in the back there was a gym in the tanning salon. And the lady comes up to the front and she's like, oh, you know, how can I help you? And I said, I looked at the gym in the back. I said, well, how much to work out here? Because it was right next door to the bank that I was working in. She goes, oh, I'm not looking to sell membership for. She said, actually, I'm looking for trainers who want to like use the space to train people. That literally that day I quit the bank and I rented that gym and I started my personal training. But that's how I started it.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, you want to talk about hip shooter, like balls of steel. Like I had no fucking idea. And I just
went. I can see that. Yeah.
I just went.
Yeah. Just knowing you better now. It's like, you go,
dude.
I love it.
And I look back on it and I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Like the balls.
Just fucking go.
The balls that I did. Yeah. So
perfect.
So yeah. So there you go. If you're going to start in the fitness industry and you're young, it might be a good idea to start in corporate fitness and just freaking learn and crush it there.
You got to know what you're doing before you even think about independent training.
I'll say this.
What does irritate me, and it's something that I put myself out there a lot to people as far as helping them, you know, like give them past knowledge and, okay, you're thinking about getting a certification and, oh, I kind of want to be a trainer. I want to do what you do. That is great, but it takes a long time to understand not just how to implement a program, but to also sell yourself, get new business, you know, yada, 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 all this kind of stuff, right? It's a lot from the beginning. Don't be arrogant and think that I got a certification, now I'm going to be an independent trainer and just do my thing.
Would you guys agree that if you can't, if you're new?
You're going to say exactly what I was about to say, and we will all 100% agree on this, is that if you can't go into a club like 24 Hour Fitness and you're not the number one or number two trainer, you got no business being an independent trainer.
There you go. Nope. Yeah, if you can't succeed in corporate fitness, you're not going to succeed on your own. Hell, it's way harder.
Bad idea.
Way harder. And you know, that used to drive me nuts as somebody who managed trainers for so long, is the trainers that would be like,
that sucked in there.
They would suck and they would tell me, you know, Adam, this isn't working for me. I'm going to go do my own thing. And I'm like, cool. Because you know what? You'll be flipping burgers in fucking 6 months. Because if you can't make it here where we fucking hand you clients and then we pay $20 million a year for advertisement, you sure as shit ain't going to make it on your
own. Can tell you with full confidence right now, 100% confidence right now, the three of us could walk into any gym and within a day, probably have 10 clients.
Slaughter
within the one
I'll
day.
I'll take all your clients.
So easy compared to being private. Yeah. All right.
Next question is from Matt_peakresults. This is for you, Sal. Okay. You do get a question.
Yeah.
What do you think about...
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, yeah.
I love this.
What do you think about vaping?
Vaping. So I'm assuming he's talking about cannabis.
Yeah, vape me.
Or is he talking about the new trend of everybody doing friend. That?
Well,
that's
okay.
That's a good question.
Here's what I think about vaping. If you're vaping flower, so if you're using a vape machine like a Volcano, where you take the bud or the flower, you put it in, and it just heats it up enough to boil off the resin and the trichomes and the, you know, the active ingredients into a vapor and breathing that in. If you're doing that, that is far better than smoking, because it eliminates anywhere between 90 to 99% of all the particulate matter. So when it comes to the dangers of marijuana in terms of dangers to your health, smoking marijuana, I'll tell you something. They've been trying for the longest time, and believe me, they would love to find this connection, but they cannot connect smoking marijuana to lung cancer. They just can't do it. And now
they used to try to say it was like two packs of cigarettes was one joint or something like that.
It's actually true, because when you smoke, you do get a shit ton of carcinogens. You get a ton of carcinogens. You're breathing in all this particulate matter into your lungs. And so theoretically, yes, it should be very bad for you. However, what they're discovering now is that cannabinoids are very anti-cancer. They're so anti-cancer, in fact, that a new statement was just released by the National Cancer Institute, I think, I don't remember. It's a government entity that shows that the active ingredients in marijuana reduce things like bladder cancer and liver cancer by like 70%. So cannabinoids are so anti-cancer that when you smoke marijuana, you get the carcinogens, but the anti-cancer effects negate it, and so you end up...
just offset.
You end up zero. Yeah. You end up net negative, net nothing, right? Now, if you vape, you eliminate most of those carcinogens, and you get a benefit. Now, that being said, smoking marijuana might not give you cancer, according to studies, but it will increase your risk of getting things like lung infections, because the particulates do inflame the lung. So that kind of vaping, I think, is the best way to use cannabis, aside from eating it. The vaping where you're vaping oils with solvents in them, I can't vouch for, because I don't know how safe the solvents and stuff are that are in there that are aside from the cannabinoids.
It's so silly to me.
Right.
It's so silly to me. I just think it's
You're a connoisseur, though.
Well, yeah, I'm a connoisseur.
You like the taste. You're like a wine drinker. Like, you savor.
Well, and I like to smoke weed, because I don't want to blow some flavored.
No way,
I don't want to blow some flavored oil around. Like, that's, to me, I think it's the funniest trend I've seen ever, man. It's like, it's like
Mike's Hard Lemonade.
Well, it's
no, forget the scented stuff. Well, what about like a Volcano?
That's what I'm talking. No, I'm talking about the scented shit. I'm talking about that. That, I don't know if you guys walk around with your eyes open or not, but that's like the biggest trend right now.
Not really.
all these kids and stuff like that, and now grown ass adults that walk around with these little vape pens that are nothing but, you know, flavored tobacco or whatever like that that's in them, and they're blowing them around. It's just like, you know, I don't know. It's like the whole hookah thing. Like, these people are all excited about hookah, like it just came out or something. That shit's been around forever. Like,
I think hookahs have been around longer than cigarettes.
It's been around, it has. It's been around forever, and it's making this huge comeback right now. And I don't know if it's just because the younger population can do it at a younger age.
It just repackaged tobacco.
Yeah, and now it's these vape pens, and it's like, if I'm gonna blow smoke in and out of my lungs, it's better give me high. That's all. I'm not gonna waste my time with some flavored shit that tastes like grape. Oh, this is so great. This is so cool, dude. I look like I'm sucking on a Bic pen as I walk through the fucking store.
Now, what about vape? What about cannabis vaping versus cannabis smoke?
I will occasionally do that, because I know you're a big fan of it. When I'm with you, I absolutely vape. If you got it, it's on you and you do it. I don't like the hassle. My girl rolls my joints for me, so I have my joints rolled and ready for me. So I don't have to go through the whole process of like packing this pen. And like you said, I am a connoisseur. So I really, being somebody who, I don't think I've ever told this on the radio or not, but you know, I
don't think you have.
Yeah. I grew marijuana too. So I'm, at a connoisseur level and at a commercial level. So
legally, yes, we will say California's a state legal medical marijuana state.
I don't think we need to announce that, but okay.
I got puckered for a second.
I don't think I would be talking about it if it was illegal, right? So
I used to chop up crack.
Yeah, right. I had this huge cocaine farm too that I used to know. So, cocaine farm.
Those workers move fast. Oh, wow. Let me tell you.
I learned how to grow, and I actually really enjoyed the whole process of learning how to grow marijuana, because there's a lot of parallels with the cannabis plant with the human body as far as the type of like your proteins, carbs, and fat is like your NPK for.
So you got macronutrients for weed?
Yeah, yeah. So I got really into balancing my macros out for my plants, and then picking good genetics and strains and learning how
to. Sounds like bodybuilding.
It can be, and it's. And then I learning the taste and the different types and the, you know, percentage of indica versus sativa, the different hybrids and how they affect you physically and mentally.
Yeah, that's true.
So I got into all that stuff. And so I really appreciate the taste of it. I'm not a huge, like, even though I talk openly on this radio station, like, I'm not this big stoner. I don't smoke weed during the day. I haven't smoked weed at all today. It's not something.
All right.
It's not something that I'm like this huge advocate of. It's just something that I'm real and honest about.
No, use it at night and it helps you sleep.
I don't. I'm not somebody who comes home and has a beer at night. I'm not somebody who comes home and pours a glass of wine at night. I'm somebody who takes two or three hits off the joint that's rolled for me and then I go to bed. Mm-hmm. You know, and relax or watch
some
TV. Well,
the taste from smoke is different than the taste from vape, but each plant will have a distinct taste, a distinct flavor, and the effects can be very different. Now, when I first started using cannabis, and I've told my story why I use it for, you know, gut issues. But the first
glaucoma.
For my glaucoma. The first time I started using it, I couldn't really tell the difference from one strain to the next because I couldn't pick up on the nuances.
Oh wow!
But then as you start to use different strains and try to, then you can start to feel a difference.
Especially when someone introduces you to two extremes, and it's truly somebody who is like the farmer who knows, because that's the other thing in the marijuana, cannabis, and
some are the hybrids.
A lot of farmers bullshit because they know that things are worth more, and so they'll just pick a trendy name just so they can sell it for more money.
So what do you think about like this whole new wax, you know, like trend that's going on and all this? I've heard stories about how it's like it's so packed, like they've been able to pack so much more. THC or whatever into it, so like you get this ridiculous.
Yeah, all it is it's just concentrated. Just
super concentrated.
It's the resin all packed together, and then you heat an element up, something up. Like if you have a bong, there's something. It's called the nail. It's this metal thing. You heat it up with a blowtorch, drop this wax on there. So it incinerates instantly.
Zombie.
And you breathe in one hit is equal to like five or six hits on a joint. Which is just, it's excessive.
It's way excessive.
If you want to be scientific about it, first of all, we started this in the Bay Area. We started this before anybody in here or anybody that's listening to this radio station fucking ever heard. Like, my buddies were the ones, we started this shit way, way back when. And the way what you're doing is you're pulling all the crystals that you see on there. And you're doing it by using like a butane, something that's going to, it's basically going to freeze it off of that. And you shoot it through a tube and then it drips through. And if you were to take like a percentage of the strength of marijuana, so a strength of a marijuana strain, typically for a really strong strain, is going to be
20, so, like
somewhere between 15 and 21% is, now there's, yes, there are some that have 24, 25%, it's rare.
But you're talking about average.
On average, a really strong.
Of medical marijuana.
Yeah, medical marijuana is going to be between 15 and 21% THC levels. When you blow it through that, all you're basically doing is you're concentrating it. So you're concentrating in it, which creates this waxy.
Yeah, it's like 70%, liquid. Right?
Yeah, we've some of our stuff's been tested as high as 96.
Yeah.
So
boom.
You're talking about pure. Whoa. And you know, I never do. I never mess with that because I'm the guy who I just told you that I take two hits off a joint. There's no reason for me to even touch that because
I tried it.
It puts me on a different
I tried it once and I just don't like it. I don't like the super paranoid weird hearing noises, you know, I don't like that shit.
Yeah, it's, you know? To me, and I know that for the medical reasons and everything like that, you know, there's some people that have extreme chronic pain, and so they want super high doses of things like that. They want to be completely comatose and everything like that. I don't. I have the pain and aches that I deal with my body, they're nagging. They're not, you know, it's not chronic pain where I can't get up or I can't do anything for the day. It's, you know, my low back is bothering me. My knees are achy or like that. And two or three joints for me that settles that down. It relaxes me. Or it's my mind doesn't stop and I can't sleep at night. So it helps settle that down. So for me, it doesn't take this crazy dosage to do that.
I will say this, though. There are some strains that'll just make your mind race. And it can be a good thing, like, there was a strain, Jack Herrera, that I used, and I was on Jack Herrera when I came up with all the concepts for maps, when I came up with a lot of the theories for maps.
Yeah.
And then there's that one, what's that one, Diesel?
Yeah.
Sour Diesel. That's the one that, you know, can't shut up.
And well, and like you, I became very, when I got into the cannabis club, I knew nothing about it. And I've shared my story of how I got very intrigued with fitness when I first opened the first fitness book I started reading. I actually got the same way with cannabis. And I was not interested in it whatsoever. In fact, I was super anti it at first until I actually started to read. And when I started to read up on it and started to read these non-biased studies, instead of reading, because it's hard to find that stuff.
Well, you
we're
can't
flooded
because,
with the opposite.
Right. The only studies that are funded by the government are ones that are looking for bad effects. They don't fund anything that are looking for good effects.
Yes.
So it's disproportionate when you look at studies. You
know? So it is. It's very hard to find the good ones. And then when you start finding that out, and then I learned about it, then I learned about growing and all these things and all the positive things that come from marijuana, I became very fascinated with it. Very, very fascinated with it. And I kind of geeked out on it. I mean, and took a lot of pride in being somebody who could actually produce something that was organically grown and grown at a very high level and tasted phenomenal and was very effective from a medicinal point. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, very, very fascinated with the whole thing. And
mark my words, if once it gets legalized, I guarantee we'll come out with some kind of cannabis supplement.
Oh, I would love to do that. I would love to, you know, if we didn't have enough on our plate already, I most certainly would have a little operation that we grew. I just like doing that. I thought mm-hmm. I had a good time. Mm-hmm. In the future, it's something that would be part of for sure.
Yeah.
Mind pump strain.
Hooray.
Pre-workout strain.
Yeah, Justin can't wait for that.
Our next question is from Alessandro Thierry. Do you need to be sore after a workout to know that you're getting results?
No. Nope. No.
Sore is technically a sign mm-hmm. of overtraining.
Yeah, no. It's a very, very poor indicator of exercise performance. In fact, I rarely ever really get sore after my workouts anymore.
Right. Well, here's
unless you're switching it up pretty dramatically.
Yeah,
right? And then that happens.
And it's okay to get sore. And most certainly I get sore a lot. Where I get mad at myself because it was too far is if I know that
it's debilitatingly sore.
If it hinders my next workout.
Yeah.
If let's say, for example, I did, you know, chest and I did chest so hard, my chest is sore and even my shoulders and triceps are a little sore. I mean, I'm just like, and then I was going to go do some shoulders and triceps the next day and they're just gassed, you know, and sore from my chest workout. I mean, that to me is like I hit myself in the head like that was overdoing. There's no need for me to put the body through that.
Yeah, if you can't duplicate like the same workout, you know, in a day or two, like, yeah, you're doing too hard.
Mm-hmm.
Let's be honest. What's next?
Ferris Al-Wahidi. Weighted dips versus close grip bench press for tricep development.
Mm.
This is a little personal preference here.
Yeah, personal preference. I'd say
I like dips,
if
personally.
Okay.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you're trying to get your bench press to go up more, as well as build your triceps, then I'd go close grip bench. But if you're trying to just work your triceps and want to try something different, then I would go for dips.
I don't know. I would say, too, that, you know, weighted dips would promote a better lockout for your bench press anyway.
Sure,
so.
That's a kind of a toss-up.
Wow, see, I actually like close grip bench better.
Yeah. See, I don't really like close grip bench, though. So.
Yeah.
We're so different.
Yeah. And I think for me, I feel like I can load quite a bit of weight for a close grip bench. It's easier for me to control and keep my form. I feel like when I do my dips, I feel a lot in my shoulders and my chest, and I'm always constantly trying to tilt my body back.
I think that's probably because you're so wide.
Mm.
You think that's, you know, I think because you're so wide, you're probably getting so much more chest.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I get a lot of triceps when I do dips.
Yeah.
A lot.
I mean, and it's not that I don't at all. It's just that's why I prefer it more than the other. I still incorporate dips. And I guess that should be your best answer, too, because I think we all would agree on this. Because we probably both do both. If you've been doing a lot of weighted dips and you haven't done close grip bench press in a while, that's probably the best thing you could do, and vice versa.
Flip it,
if you've been doing a lot of close grip bench press and you don't ever
you can flip it.
You must flip it.
Probably do it. Flip it.
If you don't even know, you must flip it.
Flip it. Good.
Okay, our final question today is Secret Agent Bob 2000. He's asking about
it's a great name.
Having rough hands from lifting and what to do because it can be a little bit rough on your lady.
Yeah, when you're touching your lady.
Mm.
Rough hands.
I'll tell you firsthand that my wife does not like my rough hands.
Really?
I have to work this out. I need help from the wizard, just like my good friend here, because it's like it's one of those things, right? You're trying to set
the
stage.
Why don't you just wear gloves when you work out then?
Right?
Exactly.
Yeah, perfect. That would be actually, you know, that would make sense. However, I still have balls. Yeah, I do. They're intact.
Are you a lotion guy at all or no?
See, this is where, again, I have balls.
Okay.
But yeah,
you don't use lotion?
No.
Nowhere?
No. Why would I use lotion? I'm a dude.
I use lotion.
You get a moisturizer.
I use lotion every single day.
Unless
every,
I'm doing
every time I shower.
That's about the only time I use lotion. Then my hands are feeling great.
So don't you ever wonder why your dick is so soft, but the rest of your body's all chapped like a motherfucker?
No, he's got calluses on his dick.
Glistening.
He's got callus dick.
Well, okay, so this is kind of a tough one because I believe we all have calloused hands because we all do work out like men without gloves.
Especially when you use chalk.
Yeah, right. Oof. So, and we do all do heavy compound movements, which definitely tear the hands up pretty well. So, I do kind of have I have rough hands to a point, I guess. I don't think my fingertips are very rough. I do try and take care of my hands.
We're all looking at them right now.
Yeah, I know we all are.
I see calluses. Open your hand.
Oh, yeah, no, I definitely have calluses there. But I don't – I mean, do you touch your girl like this?
Mm. Huh?
Do you
with
touch
the big palm part?
Yeah, do you palm
your
girl?
No, but like even the tips of my fingers are really dry and cracked and scratchy.
And that's from that lotion, bro. You need a lotion.
Dude, lotion your hands up.
So –
I mean, just don't like.
I'm not gonna go
buy that. Like, where
they make man lotion too, bro?
Really?
I do. I have man's just like you see the man wipes over there. There's man lotion, so you can do some manly.
You're not giving me a prostate check with those fingers, bro.
Yeah, and then
thank God.
The other thing is, you know, I don't use my hands very much with my girl. I use mostly my mouth for most of the work I'm doing.
She doesn't like it. It's too sloppy and you know drooly. You know what I mean?
Lotion, bro. Lotion.
Lotion
it up. Don't wear gloves, though. It's better that your girl...
It leave you than you wear gloves. Yeah. If you had to pick between wearing gloves and your girl leaving you, she needs to go.
Yeah, but lotion is totally okay.
Keep your balls.
Lotion is totally masculine, totally okay.
Well, here's the thing, too.
In what situation?
Yeah. What do you mean?
Well, okay, if you carry...
When are you applying your lotion?
After a shower.
Yes, right after you get out of the shower.
Locks in the moisture.
That's the first thing you do is you...
I missed all this memo,
as soon as you walk out of the shower, that's what you do is you lotion up after you dry off.
Okay.
You do not carry it around in your purse. If you carry it on your purse, that's a problem.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so do you lotion everything, like your stomach, your back, your shoulders, right? Or do you just lotion... I lotion my arms and my legs from like the top of my knees down to my ankles, just the parts where I feel like they need the lotion.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I do.
Oh, okay. So you don't bathe in it?
Yeah, I definitely don't take the time like most girls do. They you know, lotion everything all up. I've got ashy elbows, I've got dry hands, and I have, you know, my dry ass fucking calves. So yeah, I definitely. You know,
my skin is a desert.
And the light seems to hit them better when they're lotioned up, and that makes them look a little bit bigger, so I make sure they're lotioned up the most.
Do you use face cream?
I do.
You use face cream, too?
I do. Well, I have a lotion that's for my face.
I can't touch my face, dude.
Justin's so disgusted with us right now.
Like, I don't know where I am right now. Every time I wash my face, like, too much, like I get, like, pimples.
So you don't wash your face either?
So I wash my face, but not, like, scrub it. You know what I mean?
Do you use soap?
Yeah.
You wash your face with bar soap?
No.
Liquid soap?
Yeah.
Wow, that's not good for your face.
Well,
right?
No, they make soap just for your face.
I use this tea tree oil one, and I wash my
face.
I'm sure everything gives you cancer anyway.
I bet you I'm more girly than you are, Adam, on this.
I bet you are.
Because usually I'm not. Usually
I bet
you're way girlier.
More girl. I mean,
he has herbal essence.
You
win. Because
I have my own soap. That I use because it's like it's or it doesn't it's no chemicals, it's like perfect. It's got olive oil in it.
You got a little stone thing that you
actually what you should do, even if your girl doesn't care about your rough hands, is you definitely should get a pumice stone if you get really bad calluses file them down, because I've torn calluses off and that shit sucks. I don't know if you guys have ever torn a callus.
Yeah, it hurts. Hurts like a motherfucker. You know, the other thing too is
I don't know if you guys lift heavy enough to do that.
Then they're is that a jab? Because it's blocked.
if my girl was giving me a hard time about my hands, I would probably handle them the same way I handle my feet. Like, my feet look spectacular because I get them done, I go somewhere. So I'd probably have them do my hands too, because they all do that. They'll scrub the pumice stone for you and work on all your calluses your fingernails and all your hanging nails and all that shit. And you'd have, but I have, you know, I have pretty nice hands already.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah. How do you guys look at your fingernails right now?
I came from the macho camp.
Look at you, Justin. Trying to learn all this. Look at your fingernails right now.
Look at this shit.
You did. Hey, look at. Okay. Look, not show them to me. Look at them yourself. Look at your fingernails. Okay.
I know what you're trying to do.
Yes, you always gotta make sure you do that.
I don't do that. What? No. So it's to you. It's because this is what you're used to. Right? And it is doing this to me because I'm like.
So Adam's basically trying to see if you look
I'm
at
making
your fingers
a claw.
By pushing your palm out and looking at your fingers or by curling the fingers in.
Yeah.
Apparently one is inappropriate and the other one's massive.
One is, you know, very revealing.
One is like one it's is like you're telling someone to stop.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what we're talking about.
One of them's like what a chick would do.
Yes, exactly.
The chick was looking at her nails.
That's what we're saying.
Look at my nails.
Well, there's all these little nuanced things. You know? That's why, guys know.
Magic hands.
That's why I don't know anything about lotion.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. For more information about this show and to get valuable free resources from Sal, Adam, and Justin, visit us at www.mindpumpradio.com. Until next time. This is Mind Pump.